Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Are the days of Zechariah warned of upon us? Join Stephen Bannoun and host Bonnie Harvey for a discussion of Jerusalem, the Flashpoint.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Flashpoint. Where would be the spark that ignites the world? With me, of course, Stephen Bannoun. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Sorry we're a little late, folks. you're thinking about moving up to where your dad is. Is that correct, Stephen?
That is correct. He's getting much older now, and as he is fixing to get into his 80s, we don't want to see him by himself. Yana's father also, we take care of him, and my dad still lives alone, still works every day of his life, so we've been having to go back and forth there, and we're going to try to get our internet there a little bit more up to speed so that we can record when we are away. So hopefully we won't have that issue again.
Yana's dad, does he live with you?
Yes, okay. He's actually lived with us since he was about 70 years old.
Oh, my.
And so, it's a little different with him. But he's actually in better shape than my dad is. My dad's even though my dad still works, he's not in the best shape in the world. And Yana's dad is really remarkable, and they're both the same age. They're both almost 80 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you're certainly honoring your...
About it. And worse yet is where my dad lives at is not far from Eglin. In fact, we always hear when they're testing the bombs.
Oh, boy.
Being dropped there. So... we've got a decent elevation where we're at, but you're still dealing with, you'd need to be much further inland. We do know, though, like I've said, too, before, Bonnie, and I always think it's good for people to think about in general. I really think that watching Iran in a war that could erupt at any time with Iran and Israel, which would bring Russia, would bring the U.S. as well into this conflict. This is what we have to watch for. And I think that's going to be the call sign to let us know that, hey, we're here.
Yeah.
It's begun. Yeah. And we need to make that might be the time that if you do live in any dangerous zones, you might want to at least consider going on about a 1 week vacation to see just how bad or which direction it's going to go. Because the intelligence we've gotten on it is that that's when it's going to hit the fan.
Well, I think, if people pray, I mean, then they have the divine omniscience. they'll know, in enough time to get out, and they'll know when. Even though the earth, the nations are still peaceful, if it goes in the click of a fingers, they'll be gone because Father will let them know. Okay, shall we start here? Shall we start with Israel? Netanyahu has been doing some strange things lately. Would you fill us in on that?
Absolutely. The situation coming up for the near elections in Israel is taking a very unusual turn, and that is that Netanyahu, in a desperate bid to make sure that he stays into power, is willing to actually bring in another political group, and that happens to be the Otzma Yehudit, which means Jewish power. This is is considered an ultra right-wing extremist, racist extremist group that he's looking to bring in to the coalition. We know that the Likud party, which is what Prime Minister Netanyahu is a part of now. It's already in cooperation with the Shas party, which is an ultra-Orthodox religious party. But the Otzma Yehudit, Jewish power, this party here, very notorious for the extreme side of the political spectrum. In fact, Rabbi Meir Kohani, and in his Koch party in the 1980s, Israel's Central Election Committee identified manifestly racist. And they've gone through a lot of times where they were disqualified for running for office because of these things and because of their past. And one particular member of the party there is Binzion Gobstein. And some of the listeners may know him as far as going back, not too far back in history, where he had been speaking against churches inside of Israel. And I think that Mr. Gobstein was more so focused on Catholic churches, but he was talking about all the idols that are in churches and how that they should be banned and should be totally disbanded inside of Israel and all of them to be thrown out. And with his views like this, I'd actually, at one point I took up for him because not that I agree with the extremist views, but what really kind of threw me off was that he was arrested by the Israeli authorities. And this was back in 2017, and he was charged for incitement, and it was mostly at the request of the Vatican. There had been a church that had been burned down and in Israel, and because he had expressed his views the way he did, he was actually arrested, and of course the Vatican was pushing for his arrest because of his extremist views that he has. And they did arrest him. And of course, his attorney comes out and says, well, since the Pope of Rome can now dictate what goes on in Israel by demanding his arrest, and the Israeli authority agreed to do so, he said, I assume then that he will also be judge, jury, and prosecutor as well. And yes, I agreed in that regard there. It was wrong for the Israeli government to cave into pressure by the Vatican and bringing Mr. Gobstein to bring his arrest and bring him to trial over that particular issue there. But the thing is, at the same time, we're seeing some of those things happening in America as well. I mean, you know, when I say that, when we look at the Noahide laws that Yana was speaking about in Oregon, those being enforced, being brought into our own constitution, not in the Constitution, but being made part of the laws of the land. And already 26 states in the United States are passing anti-Semitism laws in America. But it's because in part, largely because of the influence of political leaders in Israel pushing politicians in America to carry out the same. Now, that being said, I am not for anti-Semitism at all, and I don't support boycotting Israel or any of those types of extremes either. I think those are wrong to do. But at the same time, as Americans, I think that we should have – Americans still should have that right as a free nation and under our Constitution of freedom of speech to be able to express what their opinions are without the danger of being put in prison as a result of that. So it's the same kind of, it's kind of like goes the same on both sides. You know, I don't think it's right for another nation or another government entity to come and enforce their laws or to pressure the Israeli authorities to be able to carry out certain laws against their citizens based on their opinions. And I don't think that that should happen in America either.
I'm sure that some of our listeners have heard you mention the Noahide laws here. And just in case they don't know of what we're talking, how does this, could you just give us a little refresher course on how, what Netanyahu is doing to align himself with this far, 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 far right group that has previously burned a church, a Catholic church, how that bodes ill for the rest of us?
Well, of course, even the burning of the church was only alleged to be against them. There was no evidence that was ever presented that they were actually involved in it. But as far as the Noahide laws, these are the seven laws that are Talmudic laws. They're not biblical commandments, although they mirror that of what we would see in the Ten Commandments, you know, there's only one God. There's the law against idolatry. And in fact, let me just name these off for the listeners here. so that people can get an idea of just exactly what the seven Noahide laws are. And the interesting thing is, depending on where you see these laws, depends on how they will actually be written. And that's another important thing as well. But they are Talmudic. And the seven Noahide laws, if you look at them, say, for example, on the Chabad organization's website, one is do not profane God's oneness in any way. Number two is do not curse your creator. Number three, do not murder. Do not eat a limb of a living animal. Do not steal. Harness and channel the human libido. Establish courts of law and ensure justice in our world. So in reality, they only have six laws. Because the seventh law is just setting up a governmental system that will allow them to enforce the other laws. But the danger that we get into is the interpretation of these laws. And for the most part, Bonnie, those seven laws, in fact, this one of those laws being before I get into this, because I'm getting myself tongue-tied here real quick, I want to take you also to the Jewish Virtual Library, because they word the laws a little differently, and I think this is always important to note. Number one is do not deny God. Number two is do not blaspheme God. Do not murder. Do not engage in sensuous, adulterous, or homosexual relationships. Do not steal. Do not eat of a live animal. And then, of course, it's always established courts and legal system. Normally, though, the blaspheme God is not to commit idolatry. That's another verbiage that is used. And in the Talmud, they define not only what the laws mean, but what is the punishment of breaking these laws. And of course, the idolatry, according to Talmud, is that there is no other God than the God of Israel, Yahweh. He is the one God, and any of those, such as those that believe that Yeshua is the Son of God, you are in danger of capital punishment. They believe that these laws were given to Noah. That's why they call it the Noahide laws. And it's this is, like I said, it's written in the Talmud, in the Maimonides, and stipulate that no non-Jew who violated the Noahide laws was liable to capital punishment. But the capital punishment is only to the Gentiles. So whoever Israel deems to be a Gentile can be put to death for the breaking of these laws, but a Jew cannot be put to death. And so you have to look at all the breakdowns of the interpretation of the Noahide laws, and they are subject to Talmudic interpretation. And even in My Jewish Learning, they have a website called My Jewish Learning that goes so far as to say that that certain laws, or excuse me, that now that they don't necessarily have to put you to death for breaking the law of idolatry. Interesting to see. So I guess it depends on the extremism, the way they look at it.
I'm sure that law could be broken, you know, by pressure once the new Messiah comes, which will be, as I view what's happening in Israel, they're being primed, and especially the Orthodox, the far right community, they're being primed to accept the anti-Messiah, the pseudo-Messiah, the Antichrist, whatever.
Exactly. And the thing is, I kind of follow you on that too, Bonnie. I really believe that this is going to be when they're going to put that full enforcement of the Noahide laws, especially the putting the people to death.
Yes.
And this is where the believers of Yeshua will be in very serious danger.
And the Talmudic mandate for death is by how? By what means?
Beheading the person.
All right. There we go. Revelation right there. Okay. Thank you. You know, when you mentioned that, I thought, I don't know if everybody knows what we're talking about. Super. Thank you. Anything more you want to say on that before we get back to what Netanyahu is doing?
I think that pretty much sums it up. I think people do need to be aware, though, that this is being pushed on a global scale. the Noahide laws. They are already, they've already been adopted into our Constitution. And also keep in mind that there is a major infiltration, especially in Hebrew, it's in Messianic groups, because they're they figure that people that are supportive of the state of Israel and supportive of back to your roots in Judaism, that they're the most susceptible in accepting that Yeshua was not the Son of God. He was only a prophet. He is not God manifested in flesh. And that they would accept this new theology that they will come out with in the near future. And the Vatican is also going to be a major part of that. This is why Pope Francis has already gone in that direction. In fact, he was studying the Noahide laws under Rabbi, which rabbi was that? I don't want to call the name now because on the outskirts of Jerusalem, he actually studied there and he took priests with him from Central America when he was a cardinal. He wasn't even a pope at the time, and oddly enough, he becomes the next pope. So he's already studied the Noahide laws and has accepted them and has agreed publicly that they should apply to the Gentiles. So therefore, the status of Yeshua is definitely going to be lowered as a result, and that you'll see that will go across the world in the near future.
Rishkin?
So, moving on, Bonnie, going back to this issue with...
Was it Rishkin?
Yes, it was Rabbi Rishkin. That's exactly right. He is the one that has that Noahide Center.
Yes.
He's very well known. He's spoken many times at Mark Biltz's place as well, John Hagee. A lot of the evangelicals are really pulling on the inside of this, including some very prominent ones. You got Perry Stone. I don't know if Perry Stone is into the Noahide law aspect, but when John Hagee came out, when he was doing his book in defense of Israel and said that nowhere did Yeshua ever claim to be the Messiah, he had to recant and go back and recall all of his books because that created a major stir around the world.
Yeah,
he would say that. But that's what it's coming to, guys. That's exactly where it's going.
Are these Christian groups, like Perry, the Messianic groups like Biltz, do you think they know how the Talmud interprets idolatry for the Noahide laws?
I have a feeling, Bonnie, that in some cases, the people, for the most part, don't. Many people are so excited about, especially when we say the expression is we discover our Hebrew roots, that there can be the danger of forgetting who Yeshua actually is to us as well, and they're using that against the people. And I have a feeling that some of the leaders may have from the beginning that we see out there were actually part of this plan. They knew what they were doing from the beginning. And then maybe some of them, they don't know. Maybe they honestly don't know the seriousness of it. Maybe they're just being lured away because of the connections they might have, say, for example, with Israel. Think about it. If you take for John Hagee, for example, he's friends with Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel. It's, no doubt an esteemed in his mind might be an esteemed privilege to be friends with the prime minister of Israel and looking at biblical prophecy that Israel was to be reestablished as a nation. We forget, though, that just because we're reestablished as a nation, it's only a remnant that is going to be saved in the first place.
Yes. Judgment is coming to Israel the same as the whole world. And this is exactly where the end focus is going to be. It is the deity of Yeshua. Because another Messiah is going to land. The Catholic Church is already prepared for it.
Let's start getting into, we'll touch into that. Let me just real quick pull here where I'm at here. But yes, Russia, we have a very serious situation going on right now with Russia. And Zero Hedge was reporting Russia will target U.S. with new hypersonic weapons if it deploys missiles to Europe. That's speaking about if the United States deploys missiles to Europe. And now Putin has stated that, you know, we don't need another Cuban Missile Crisis over U.S.-Russia dispute, but it is becoming a much larger issue on a regular basis. And right now, Putin is threatening to deploy his Zircon missiles, which actually travel at 9 times the speed of sound. And they carry a range of 620 miles. It's part of their upgrade in their defense capabilities against what they perceive to be an increasingly aggressive U.S. and NATO posture that's going on. Now, of course, 620 miles is not very far, but it doesn't mean that they don't have other means at their disposal as well. You know, Russia does have some supersonic missiles that are nuclear capable that can basically reach anywhere in the world. There's nothing that can stop it, according to the Russians. They've said that clearly, and they've held that position, that the AVM system in Europe is not going to stop these missiles from coming in.
Is that because by the time they get a reading on where they're at, they're already long gone?
Well, the problem is the missile defense missiles that are being used now, even like in the case of U.S. the Patriot or whatever, they can't go fast enough. We don't have any defense missiles that can travel at supersonic speeds like that. So with that being said, there's nothing that could ever catch up to the missile once it's fired. Once it's fired, it's coming in, and there's just no stopping it. And Russia ended up getting the upper hand on that in their technology, and now they've actually developed their submarine drone now.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've really been – And what's odd to begin with such a fraction of the budget as what the U.S. has, but they have really been developing a far more sophisticated technology. And they focus nuclear because Russia does not believe they can sustain any type of ground war with the U.S. or NATO combined, especially. That's just too many countries to take on at one time.
Well, they're probably not paying $800 for a hammer like the U.S. government is
exactly
paying to Lockheed and other ripoffs that are just ripping off the taxpayers. Now, these underwater drones, you know, Groover and Dudemann both saw submarines on our shore launching missiles very close. They were there. Nobody knew they were there. They suddenly pop up and launch missiles. Is this the underwater drone, or is this a different weapon completely?
Well, you know, the thing is I'm not sure as of yet. The underwater drone is something that is just, in fact, Sputnik, this was something that just came out, that Russia has now released this information. But the Pozdion nuclear-powered underwater drones were for the first time shown on Wednesday by Russia's 24 TV channel. And the clip, which only lasted a few seconds, shows this particular drone moving out of a container, simulating the corresponding compartment of the drone carrier of a submarine. But we don't really know as of yet what the capabilities are going to be. Nuclear power really tells us that it can be underwater and it can travel for long periods of time and never have to do anything. But I can't imagine, let me put it this way. According to the Sputnik News article, they said that the drones can be equipped with both conventional and nuclear weapons, which will allow them to hit a wide range of targets. But just think of this. It says it can take out aircraft carrier groups, coastal fortifications, and infrastructure. If it's got nuclear capabilities and it's a drone, they don't care if they blow the drone up as well, necessarily, if they want to detonate it inside the drone. And the thing is, Bonnie, the thing is so small.
Wow.
That's what's alarming. These drones are not big.
They're even discernible on radar. We have to quit. Pick us up on the other side, everyone.
Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Are the days of Zechariah warned of upon us? Join Stephen Bannoun and host Bonnie Harvey for a discussion of Jerusalem, the Flashpoint.
Welcome, everyone, to the second half of Flashpoint. We were just talking about the drones of being very small. Do you think they're... You've been in the military, Stephen. Do you think they're too small to even show up on radar?
Well, here's where the big problem comes, Bonnie, is the fact that they can travel at extreme depths. That's going to be something that's going to really pose a challenge to the U.S. And, you know, sonar, they could, you know, it all depends on the technology, because one of the big issues is the fact of sound. It's not just looking at an object, because, you know, you got whales in the water. You've got, you know, all kinds of things in the water that they can pick up like that. But, of course, being metal is a little different. But the issue is the fact that it depends on how quiet this is. And so they were very careful about what they've allowed the public to see in it, in the video footage that they show on this thing. And it's pretty obscure on when they actually show part of this. But they do let a portion of this to be seen, and they even show the weapons coming out of it, just brief second. So it's going to make a major challenge for the U.S. military. But you got to keep in mind, too, the U.S. military, and with their own intelligence, has also been watching these type things for years. So the U.S. military, they knew or should have known when Russia was going to present this. They should have their intelligence should be that. They know what they're working on, just like Russia knows what we are working on as a general rule, because it's very difficult to keep all this stuff under, you know, even though you might have top secret information, there's always someone in there that has infiltrated their way in. And of course, Russia, too, has blurred out, for example, in the image of this drone, they have blurred out the type of what type of prop is on this this particular drone. And that's interesting, because the prop itself is what gives away that vehicle underwater. And that's always been, like in some of the movies they came out with years ago, Red October, I think, was one of those that where with Russia's submarine, it was so quiet, you just could not hear the thing traveling in the water. And this is what posed a great risk to the United States. And that has a lot to do with the prop itself. What is pushing, what is propelling this vehicle through the water, and what have they done to make sure that you don't hear it coming? So, big issue.
Mm. And yes, and that probably would indicate not only the sound, but also, you know, what propels it at such rates. You know, yes. Any info about the bankruptcy of the United States?
I have not been following so much on that, but I will say this. One thing that's concerning me when it comes to the United States and our financial situation is a new development that Congressman Elijah Cummings has kind of released. And this just came out today. He is part of the Oversight and Reform, the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. And there have been several whistleblowers that have raised grave concerns with the White House efforts to transfer sensitive U.S. nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia. That being said there, you know, I cannot help but wonder, you know, why would the U.S. government be willing to transfer that type of technology to the Saudis? I mean, okay, yeah, one, we sold them our largest military aid package in the history of the United States under President Trump, which that's where President Trump can boast of the largest number of or the best ratings of unemployment in many years, which it's true. It is the best unemployment ratings we've had. But what are we doing? We're employing people to manufacture more weapons to kill our neighbors and to get rid of everybody. And but now we're talking about selling nuclear secrets. Now, granted, the Pakistanis had already promised to give the Saudis a nuclear bomb because the Saudis had helped fund their nuclear program to begin with. But, you know, the Saudis historically have never liked Israel. They tolerate Americans. And here we're going to take another Arabic nation. We're already complaining that Iran might be get a nuclear weapon. We went to war against Iraq, claiming that Saddam Hussein already had the yellow cake and was manufacturing weapons of mass destruction. In fact, it was even stated by Prime Minister Netanyahu that he was doing it, that they had the evidence, only to find out later there was no smoking gun. There was no weapons of mass destruction. So this is where the grave concern is throughout the Middle East, is all this more and more nuclear weapons. And in fact, Israel is probably the only nation that actually has nuclear weapons, but they are, you know, undeclared to the rest of the world. In fact, they will not sign the IMF treaty. They won't take part of anything, nothing to do away with the proliferation of nuclear weapons. So now we're going to take and sell some technology to the Saudis. So it's just not good. It says, according to the article, it says whistleblowers who came forward have expressed significant concerns about the potential procedural and legal violations connected with rushing through a plan to transfer nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia. They have warned of conflicts of interest among top White House advisors that could implicate federal criminal statutes. They have also warned about working environment inside the White House marked by chaos, dysfunction, and backbiting, and they have warned about political appointees ignoring directives from the top ethics advisories at the White House, who repeatedly and unsuccessfully order senior Trump administration officials to halt their efforts. So, you know, I just don't really get it, Bonnie. I mean, the thing is are we in such a bad financial disarray in this nation, which no doubt we are, that basically everything becomes for sale. And so now you can purchase anything.
That certainly has happened before. Just think of the Uranium One and all the millions that flowed into the Clinton Foundation. And other, who's that congressman from Nevada on the ranch debacle. I mean, you know, that money, they wanted that grazing ground so they could set up, you know, an interest for China.
This too, Bonnie, is that Jared Kushner is getting ready to embark on another Middle East tour, and Riyadh is one of his stops. And the big issue on the table is offering the nuclear technology to these countries in the Middle East. So, you know, where does it stop as far as in what they're doing there?
Do we need their money, their oil money? Do we need their willingness to support a two-state solution? I think this country is getting to the point where the vultures are circling. With $22 trillion in debt.
And you know, the thing is, we wouldn't be in so much debt if we weren't forced into all these so-called wars on terror that seem to never really amount to anything. And, you know, it's not to say we don't have terror in the Middle East. We do. We have a ISIS militants. We have jihadists of every faction you can possibly think of. But in reality, Bonnie, they're all funded by the West. They're all funded by the Saudis. And they're all, you know, the different groups that we are allied with are the ones that are funding all the overthrow of all these different nations in the Middle East. And these nations that we're busy trying to overthrow really are not that big of an issue. And
Cloward-Piven?
So.
Multi-pronged. It's Cloward-Piven, which is bleed the U.S. dry. So it becomes bankrupt. This was established by, I think it was two Cornell University professors, Cloward and Priven, a way to defeat America, so that lets you know, how patriotic they are. Also, it has the It's like the trifecta. Now, it gets able-bodied young men out of this country, so they couldn't defend it. Plus, it...
And I will say this. One thing that the Saudis are... And this is probably one of the reasons why the U.S. is pushing giving them this technology, is because the Saudis are using their natural resource, their oil and gas, in order to power their power plants there. And the U.S. has been in a push to be able to change that and to give them as many as 16 nuclear reactors by 2030 or 2032, something like that. So this is one reason why they're pushing it. And not to mention, it would mean $7 billion each in the construction of these, which the Saudis don't believe in doing any work themselves, so that would be more than likely U.S., mainly U.S. sponsored. But who knows, probably end up being Chinese workers, because the New World Order is employing the Chinese, not the Americans. But, you know, there will be a handful of Americans that will be employed in that. But the U.S. will also be, you know, supplying the technology, you know, who knows what else, you know, things that we can manufacture here that will also increase jobs in America. But at the same token, though, everybody's always worried about what you can develop with it afterwards, and that is nuclear bombs as a result. You know, so there's the trade-off, and this is what the Oversight Committee is concerned about, is that we're trading off this nuclear technology, even though it's being done for the purpose of building nuclear power plants. We're trading it off in order to create more jobs at home. But at the end of the day, what's the difference in with Iran? Of course, they would say Iran's talking about wiping Israel off the map. Well, the Saudis have not always been a friend of Israel either. So why do we suddenly think that the Saudis can have 16 reactors when everybody's up in arms about the Iranians having one? And, of course, that would come back down to, well, Iran has threatened to wipe us off the map. You know, I don't like the government of Iran. I can promise you that. But I've also seen too many times where the Saudis say it is okay to lie about what we feel about the Israelis. At the end of the day, we'll deal with it later. So, you know, the Saudis are no safer for Israel than the Iranians are when it comes down to it. It's just right now we're playing together. But later down the road, it may not be the same.
And with fundamental principles in Islamic law, like Hudaybiyah and Taqiyya, where you can say anything in order to promote Islam, and then it doesn't. In the end, it doesn't make any difference. It's just to promote Islam, or Hudaybiyah, you know, pact with them until you're powerful enough that you can beat them. And any pacts you have would be, at that point, invalid. So, I think it's so, but this is true. I mean, I didn't make these things up. They did. But it's difficult to, pact and deal with, groups that think it's okay to lie and to go back and to not honor their word. And so whatever they want these for, they want it for reactors, you know, as you say, who knows, but it will end up, on Israel. And we know from prophecy that Israel will take a beating. What do you think about Jared Kushner's peace deal? Isn't it supposed to be unveiled like April 6 or something? It's next month. No,
yes,
the month after.
Right around Passover is when they're supposed to unveil this peace plan. And I always kind of watch, is this where they're, who's going to be the so-called Messiah when the time comes? And I always keep my mind on, are they grooming Jared Kushner for this particular, who knows? But I just don't trust him to begin with. And he's very, very sly guy, and just the access that he's been given in the White House. I have to say, Bonnie, I've never seen our government ran quite the way it has been. But then again, I know over the years there's been a lot of presidencies that have come and gone that have been pretty sinister as well. But it just seems like everything is changing in the day we're living in now. Even people getting into politics, period. We've got some pretty interesting characters out there that don't know anything about American history or anything else, and yet they're becoming congressmen or congresswomen and things like that. I mean, it's almost...
Alexandria?
Yeah.
She's an Instagram star. She's our congresswoman. Heavens to Betsy.
You know, the only thing I would have to say in her case is that she really, for her own sake, needs to go spend some long hours in lectures to get up to date on what's really going on. Because now that she's been elected to her position, she's really makes some very uneducated comments out there about the situation, especially when it comes to the Middle East. I've listened to some of these interviews that she's done, and I'm like, are you really serious? Okay, but where do we go next?
Mainstream media won't reveal that, won't promote that, won't be as aghast over that as they should be. They'll probably hide it up. What she's good at doing is acting in front of her camera and buying clothes, I guess. Where do we go next?
Let's touch on Venezuela, Bonnie, because
okay,
Venezuela,
let's go.
Even though some of this is about a week old, it's a week old, we didn't get a chance to speak about some of the things that are going on there. Maduro is definitely feeling the pressure of the U.S., and it seems very obvious that there is definitely going to be an overthrow of his government. And there has been quite a bit of information coming out that he has been moving all types of anti-aircraft guns to the border, especially with Colombia. And I've seen this since February the 11th, different videos coming out of the S-125 batteries, the ZU-23. And these are Russian-made systems that are being transported near the borders. But they're done in a very covert manner. They're hidden inside of, in one case, they put them in the backs of trucks, covered them up that they use to carry natural gas to homes. Some of them are in the backs of military equipment or military jeeps and stuff that are like military personnel transport. But they managed to put these systems in there. Now, I think they're trying to hide it from the U.S. government, what they're doing. But then again, the systems are so crude and old, I don't know if there'd be of any effectiveness whatsoever against the U.S. military or even the Colombian military with U.S. support. But we know that President Trump has already made it very clear that he intends to have all options on the table. And, you know, they've done all the sanctions on the different companies, including the Venezuelan-owned Citgo giants, it just seems to be a matter of time. And oddly enough, there's a lot of support for President Trump to go down there and take over this nation, but I can't help but wonder where it ends. I mean, now there's talk of overthrowing Nicaragua's government. I don't know if it was Secretary Pompeo or Mike Bolton, one that actually mentioned that recently. And I'm just saying to myself, you know, what really is happening in the world then is that we are dealing with a new world order that is right under our nose, is being set up right before us. And, you know, and even McCabe, the former FBI director that was fired by President Trump after he fired James Comey, he mentions how that they say they have all that oil. And even in his latest information coming out is very accusatory of President Trump. Of course, I take stuff like that with a grain of salt from the FBI because I realize how much corruption there is in the FBI, CIA, and all those factions. But then again, there's a lot of corruption as well in politics as well. In fact, they work hand in hand together. So it's almost like there's a power struggle in America, but what's the power struggle for? Or are they really making it look like a power struggle when at the end of the day, Bonnie, maybe it's not so much a power struggle, it's only to what do they call it, the Hegelian dialectics, is to make us think that we have a power struggle in the government, and that President Trump is really the great savior of the nation, and that if he's toppled, that the American people will end up having to come to his aid, whereas they may all be working together from the beginning. So,
and I think that latter choice is probably the more accurate.
Exactly. So it's just not.
I think it's going to be a rush to flashpoint, you know, whether it's Venezuela or if it's Syria. You mentioned before the show wanting to get to the bombings in Syria also, unless you have something more to say about Venezuela, but we have probably 5 minutes, 4 minutes.
Well, I think Venezuela, we can, that's pretty much sums it up right there. You know, we're just getting, we're in some dangerous times, Bonnie, very dangerous times. And I cannot stress enough to the listeners that are listening in today and everything to really be in prayer about the hour that we're living in. It's so easy to be caught up in a political ideology in one way or the other and think this is the right way or that's the right way. And, you know, and then to go to one extreme or the other. And we're forgetting that our loyalty is not in politics, but it is with Yeshua. He is should be our loyalty. And this is where our focus has to be. We can't have our focus on man. We can't have our focus on the things of this world. This is not our kingdom. This is not our home. As Abraham so eloquently put it, you know, I am searching for a city whose builder and maker is Yah.
Absolutely.
And that's what we need to be looking for as well. And so, you know, we can look at the things that are going around us in the world, and we can see that we are in very chaotic times. But we have to remember that this is not our home, and we're looking for our Redeemer. We're looking for the return of Yeshua, and but when he comes, of course, it's with judgment. And I don't want to be found on the wrong side of that equation.
Not at all.
Yeah, sure. The listeners as well, I don't think they want to be found on that side. So, you know, as much as we bring up the political sphere that's happening in the world today, I think that we also need to keep in mind that we don't want to be married to the political side of it. And that's why I always like to bring out the issue even about Israel. As much as I believe that Israel would become a nation as the scripture prophesied it would be, I also know that the leaders of Israel will do something that will bring about a major catastrophe for our people, because it fulfills biblical prophecy. So I don't even want to be on the political arena debate of Israel either. You know, our desire should be to try to get the gospel to as many people as we possibly can, to let them know that Yeshua truly is the King. He's the Messiah. He's the one that is coming back. And, you know, and that all efforts otherwise will be completely in vain if we fail at that message there.
And, you know, for that reason, when they ask for political contributions, I don't even believe in it anymore. I just think, you know what? I think we're headed for judgment, people. I mean, God told Jeremiah not to pray for his people. Stop it. Don't pray for them. They just await judgment. They're going to be gone. Don't pray for this obstinate people. And I don't mean that. I mean, he hasn't told us, I guess, as a group not to pray, but certainly pray for the true believers, because they are the little guys everywhere.
Yes. Absolutely.
But we're facing a world where we haven't been before. This country is bankrupt. That's never happened. Our country has political schisms that it has never seen. Not in, my goodness, you know, the 200 plus years we've been around. We were late this week. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.